The majority of humans now live in cities. You probably know cities are setting heat records in recent years. Projections suggest as Earth warms, they will get like hot ovens. We need to know why and what to expect. Dr. Lei Zhao is an assistant professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of Illinois. After graduating from Nanjing University, Lei got his doctorate at Yale. He specializes in the physics and engineering of the atmosphere, with a focus on urban environments. He is the lead author of the new paper, Global Multimodal Projections in Local Urban Climates, that was published January 4, 2021, in Nature Climate Change. Lei Zhao, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's fine to talk about the global mean temperature as they do at the IPCC. It's going up a degree or two or more as we heat the planet. But cities get a lot hotter than the average, and because that average includes vast areas of the ocean, how much difference is there between global warming and what really happens in cities?
So when people usually talk about global climate change or global warming, and people are informed a number like 1 or 2 or even 4 degrees, and then that might mislead some people thinking it's a constant number across the Earth's surface, but actually it is not. It's highly spatially variant, highly spatially heterogeneous. And then for cities specifically, you feel even hotter than your surrounding landscape and your surrounding areas. So there's really a difference in terms of the warming signal and the warming magnitude in cities compared to its surrounding areas. And we are talking about maybe, depends on the location, we are talking about 2 degree difference, roughly. Some locations warm larger, some location cities may even cooler, as you can see in our figure one of the of our paper. But yeah, there's definitely a difference between the urban environment and the typical regional or global warming signal.
And that's where the majority of humans live. So what drives cities to become hotter than their surrounding countryside?
From the landscape-wise, cities are a lot different from natural surfaces or vegetated surfaces, such as forest or grassland or agricultural land. Cities are full of the built structures, impervious surfaces, man-made surfaces, faces. So there are a number of candidate reasons or candidate causes that lead cities to become hotter than its surroundings. For example, when we build city, we cut down trees, we convert the bare soil or vegetated surface into man-made built structures. So those kind of conversion from pervious surface into impervious surfaces will reduce the evaporative cooling. So city will become hotter. And the second reason is, in cities, you can see we have large fraction of vertical faces like built structures, and those could reduce the turbulent transport of the sensible heat that removed from the surface. So that's like trapping the heat into the urban layer, into the urban canopy layer. So that cause could lead to another warming effect. And also in the cities, because the materials of the built structures are different from natural surfaces, right, from the vegetated surfaces, this kind of artificial materials of the buildings, other surfaces in the city, those are a good heat capacitor. So they absorb the heat during the daytime, and then they can release at nighttime. So that's really, we call it a release of a stored heat. That's another reason. There's a third reason of cities is hotter than surrounding rural areas. Another reason is also related to the materials, because, if you're from the aerial image, if you look at cities and surrounding vegetation, you probably see the color, the human perceived the color, it looks different for cities for example, forest or grassland, right? The brightness, the color is different. That's actually because of the albedo or albedo in the shortwave band, and also emissivity. Although people cannot see long wave, but the emissivity also affects the radiation. So basically those kind of parameters, the kind of radiative parameters affect the city's radiation balance, radiation budget. So that can lead to another reason that city is hotter than surrounding rural areas. And the last reason is the anthropogenic heat. in cities, we turn on AC, we turn on heating, and also we drive. So those kind of the anthropogenic waste heat from the HAC, from the traffic, can cause another reason that leads city warmer. That's the typical reason of why cities become hotter than the surrounding countryside.
And are we here talking about the urban heat island effect, or is this something different that you're working on in your paper?
Yes. So talking about the temperature, that is exactly, that is the urban heat island effect. However, in our paper, we are not only, because the emulator not only predict temperature, it can predict other, you know, climatic variables. When people usually talk about urban heat island, it's mostly just the temperature, so the relatively higher temperature in cities compared to surroundings. However, cities, display a different climate compared to the surroundings, not just in terms of temperature. Also, other variables can also be different. But yes, urban heat island is definitely one of the most important effects that cause city has different effects, has different climate effects with surroundings.
How hot do you expect cities to get, and what would it be like to live there?
So in terms of according to our projection, which is a multi-model projection, it's very spatially variant. So different regions, the cities in different regions can have different warming signal. But according to our projection, we can see that if it's under a high emission scenario or a business as usual scenario, then the city can be warmed up to 7 degrees Celsius in certain like hotspot regions. And so we are talking about like 1 to 7 degree warming in future, and with a lot of areas actually has warming larger than 4 degrees.
So why did you and your international team of scientists decide to take on this study?
I see. Yeah. So actually, it's actually because, you know, first we are, I myself are very interested in urban climate, urban environment, and I'm interested in understand what are the climate-driven risks that cities are and will be facing, and also what should we do. So I'm interested in this type of questions. And then when I want to look at what the, you know, the how the climate models project the future, and then we find a significant gap, it's because that, you know, it might be because of a legacy issue that, you know, the early version of those climate models, global climate models, are designed for the purposes of large-scale studies, large-scale dynamics or feedback. So cities are just occupy too small a fraction. For example, only 3% of Earth's land surface. So it's too small in those global scale models to resolve, or too small to cause any discernible changes in the large scale or broader scale feedback or dynamics. So almost all of the models they don't have an urban representation. So that caused a problem. So the traditional global climate model projections of surface climate is actually global projection of non-urban surface climate. However, you know, like you mentioned, cities are home to more than half of the population, and this population is projected to be reached to even 70% mid of the century. So there's a disproportionate mismatch between the city's area and its impacts, especially human perceived impacts. So we want to close this gap by providing an urban specific projection. So basically, climate just for urban areas. That's how we get to work on this kind of project and trying to provide multimodal projections of urban-specific climate.
I find that really interesting. It's almost like there's going to be two climate changes. There's going to be the global climate change with its broad picture, but then there's going to be the climate change that most of us are going to really feel in the cities. So I know that pretty well every city in the world keeps day-to-day weather records. Is this being correlated well into a big picture of what is happening in urban environments?
Oh, that's a very good question. Well, yes, it's definitely helpful that, you know, like a lot of the cities have, or almost all the cities, they have a record of the meteorology or climatology variables, and then those records can help us to understand the long term trend, a warming or the picture of the urban environment. However, there are also caveats about those kind of records of the city stations. The reason is if you look at those weather stations or labeled as urban weather stations, if you look at those stations, you will see a lot of stations, they are actually not located in the urban or the urban that's by general sense, because those stations are, for example, located in an airport. So that's different. The landscape, the airport landscape is different from the city center, right, from the tall building district. So it's different. So actually, those signals might give you a biased image or biased picture of what real people will feel inside the city. And also, because the weather stations measurements, they have their standards. It has to follow the WMO standards, or they need to clear cut the landscape, you know, a certain range, and also depending on the location. So the weather station measurements really measures very localized environment, very localized temperatures. So, for example, if this station happened to be in, let's say, the central park of New York City, then it's probably the measurements will show a lot cooler than what you really feel in other parts of the New York City, right? The built area of New York City. So, yeah, the weather records of the station do have a very important merit or a very important merit for showing the historical trend and for us to investigate the urban environment. However, there are a lot of the caveats. So when you are looking at those data, we need to be careful.
Well, I think you brought up a great point, because so often I see on the news, and it is measured at the airport, that the temperature was such and such, but on my front porch, it's a couple of degrees hotter than that. So if we continue on our current emissions course, the planet warms 2 degrees or whatever over pre-industrial times, what does that mean for cities? I mean, what I'm trying to get at here is sort of the timing. Are we talking about 2050 it's going to be really hotter in cities? 2100? Or?
Oh, I see. Our paper provides the whole course of we document the whole time series of the projections up to from the roughly beginning of the century towards the end of the century, so people can basically grab whatever time scale of their interest. So the 4.4 degree or for the high emission scenario, that temperature difference is the end of century minus the beginning of the century. So that's a 4 degree warming difference. And so we want to highlight the contrast between the, so give a long term projection. And so in terms of the exact timeline, I think people need to look at the region that's they are interested because it's, again, it's like the climate change, the general climate change. It's highly spatially variant. For some regions, it can reach to 2 or 3 degrees in the mid of century, so in the next 20 or 30 years, 2 or 3 decades. For some regions, it's a warm, cities warm seems lower. So it really depends on the region.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Lei Zhao from the University of Illinois, and we're talking about cities becoming hot like ovens. So we now have mega cities that extend over large distances like Los Angeles or Tokyo and many in China. Does that change expectations for urban heat?
Oh, what a great question. I should say yes and no. So the no part is because we are providing the urban-specific projection. So in the modeling domain, actually, we are using the urban subgrade temperature. We actually discussed this a little bit in our paper. So if we are talking about, you know, like urbanization, if the cities are become mega cities at just a horizontal expansion, then the magnitude of the urban warmth probably are more or less the same. It's just that we got more area of the hotter place because you convert, for example, rural areas or low-density areas to cities. So you get a larger area of urban warmth. However, the urbanization is not just the, you know, only urban expansion, city expansion, right? The process of urbanization usually is a combined horizontal expansion and the vertical build-up. So there are studies, previous studies, showed that the morphology change of the city do affect the urban environment, especially thermal comfort, thermal environment. So especially for nighttime. So we would expect that if the urbanization, the mega cities are both horizontally expanded and vertically built, then you would expect even more alarming or concerning warming in cities, especially at nighttime.
Humans tend to measure the severity of any problem by the number of deaths that result. Extreme heat certainly kills humans, but using the death toll as a measurement, I think, is misleading because after some heat disasters, like in Europe or in India, authorities worked out mitigation strategies, cooling centers, things like that, and it reduced the death toll. But does that mean that the problem of urban heat matters less if fewer people die?
Wow, right. That's a very good question. Yeah. I agree that if we just use the death toll as a measurement, is somewhat misleading. Because, for example, if some kind of strategy that reduced the death toll, it's probably because of, for example, the city has better health facilities that to, you know, provide the first help, or or people have like better access to those have better access to those super severe situations. And then, so it reduced the death toll, but that's not necessarily means the heat environment, the urban heat got reduced. So, and also, for example, the urban heat problem, urban heat phenomenon does not only just cause mortality, right? It also cause morbidity, also cause the large increase of energy use or energy instability. It also can cause a large reduction of the workplace productivity. And so all those kind of impacts are related to urban heat. So I do agree that just to use a death toll is somewhat a misleading measurement. So, of course, people need to work out mitigation strategies to reduce the death toll. However, I think the root cause is we need to mitigate the urban heat rather than just that toll number.
Your study also suggests cities will experience an almost universal drop in relative humidity during the summer. We all know we can tolerate higher heat when the air is drier. maybe we won't really notice the new heat?
Well, I actually don't think so. Yeah, you're right that we do feel more burden, more heat burden in a humid heat situation, right? Because it's prevent us sweating. So basically, usually a combined heat and humid situation cause more heat stress. That's correct. However, for example, if you look at thermodynamics, then the rising temperature and the dropping humidity has a compensating or contradicting effect for the human perceived this heat stress. So the particular rising temperature causes you feel more heat stress, and the dropping humidity might cause you feel less about heat stress. So there's really this kind of the net effect really depends on this kind of who wins this kind of compensating, this kind of contradicting effects. And we do provide actually the heat stress projections in the future in our paper. It actually shows that in most of the urban areas, people feel more heat stress, feel more burden of the heat than what the solely air temperature measures. So that indicates that the largely rising temperature actually wins out the dropping effects or the drying relative humidity in cities.
China has developed many big cities, brand new ones, with millions of people in the last few decades, and the government there is well aware of global warming. What does your study suggest will happen with Chinese cities as we head towards a hotter future?
Indeed, in recent decades, there are massive and rapid urbanization that occurred in China. And according to our projection, actually, I think the northern part of China are projected to undergo a significant or substantial warming with high multimodal confidence. So basically, models agree that those regions, those east and north part of China, will undergo like roughly 4 degree warming in this century. So I think in future urbanization, the policymakers, the decision makers, or local practitioners, they really need to take the active urban adaptation into their climate agendas to try to mitigate this kind of warming burden to urban residents.
Are there any significant findings for cities in South America?
Oh, yes, actually, we find it, according to our projection, we find this. So in general, South America cities, they have like 1 to 5-ish degree warming are projected. But actually, the most pronounced warming signal is actually inland. So the center South America, the inland cities region. So those parts of the cities really need to take this kind of climate projections into consideration for their future planning or development choices.
So you're still dealing in averages, though. I mean, would the 4.4 degree C worst-case scenario for urban heat reflect the heat that actually shows up? Could some cities become even hotter during heat waves?
Yes, exactly. So what we are showing here, we actually are showing a summer monthly mean or decadal monthly mean average. So it's indeed an average case. So it is not the extreme event. So so you can consider this is more showing a norm rather than extreme. So then people can expect that during the heat waves, the cities can be even hotter, can be a lot hotter. Actually, there are indeed studies previously, they show that kind of under this kind of worst case scenario, what's the warming in cities during heat waves? And the results are really devastating. It's really alarming. If you look at those warming, those temperature numbers, it's actually far beyond the kind of the safety threshold, or far beyond the human adaptivity limit. People use like web up temperature to indicate at human adaptivity threshold. I think 35 degree in web up temperature, that's kind of a commonly used threshold for human adaptivity. And those kind of during heat waves, those warming scenarios can be much larger than this threshold. So yeah.
Would you send me a link to that paper, and I'll put it in my blog so listeners can find it?
Oh, sure, definitely, yes.
I appreciate that. Okay, so this new science reveals a bumpy heat map in the future and city temperatures bulging up. How does your new information affect the way that scientists should use large climate models to project the future?
I should say that the first, the urban projections, it won't affect the large-scale projections that, usually large climate models that scientists use to project the future, because, again, cities occupy too small a fraction. So it's only roughly 3% of the Earth's land surface. So if you look at large regional scale or global scale, then this kind of city signal will be diluted within the average. So I don't think the city temperature projection will affect the large-scale projection. However, it does affect the climate impact, vulnerability, sustainability applications for cities, because as we mentioned, that urban climate, local urban climate, is different from its surroundings, from the regional scale or global scale. So when people whose interest is in urban, then when they use the large climate model projections, then they probably want to look at the urban specific projections rather than the other landscapes, because we don't think that's an accurate alternative.
So the only solution is to stop adding greenhouse gases to the atmosphere, but we are still adding tons of carbon and methane and nitrous dioxide. How does this developing branch of science about urban heat assist urban planners and citizens?
Yeah, great question. So, actually there are studies showing that for urban planners or citizens, people are usually talking about like two sets of developing choices. One is, for example, carbon mitigation, trying to reduce the carbon emission or other greenhouse gas emissions. That's more of the mitigation. Another set of the planning or developing tools are adaptation. That is basically actively modify the urban land surface, like the buildings, or actively modify the urban landscape to try to adapt the climate change. So that's a tool set up the tools, and there are studies previously showed that. So neither of this, each of the two alone, can mitigate the heat phenomenon itself. So that means we really need both mitigation, like the try to reduce the greenhouse gas emission, and also the active modification of the urban landscape. So we need to take both mitigation and adaptation into the climate agenda.
What other research are you working on, Lei?
Thank you for this question. So my group is a group of people who are very interested in urban climate, so and climate impacts and adaptation mitigation. So we are working on we are interested. Ultimately, we are interested in like two big questions. One is what are the climate-driven risks that cities will face in the future under rapid urbanization coupled with climate change? And the second question is what should we do? So we have people working on the climate-energy interactions and the urban hydroclimatic extremes. We have people working on the human-perceived impact from climate change in cities, and we also have we're also working on modeling the newly developed, the commonly proposed urban adaptation strategies such as green infrastructure, white infrastructure, energy infrastructure. How those adaptation strategies, how those innovations in urban planning and development help. Help cities towards a more sustainable and a resilient future.
You have been listening to Dr. Lei Zhao, Assistant Professor at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Lei Zhao, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Alex. It's a great pleasure speaking with you and your audience.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.